Remember when we first met John McClane? Argyle picked him up from the plane and took him down to Nakatomi Tower to meet with Holly. He came to get her back and to be her man, but Hans and his buddies fucked up the plan. And that's about when everything went sour at the Christmas party. And the terrorists were overzealous, but it was sweet when they killed Ellis. And with a little help from Alan, John McClane kicked ass. We're gonna die.
Welcome to Jill's Movies and Junk. I'm Notorious J.I.M.
And I'm Julian.
And today's episode is going to be a review of A Good Day to Die Hard. So before we get to the review, I want to start off by mentioning the original films. Starting off with Die Hard, the original. Alright, Die Hard was actually more... What?
He had like an accent. Go back and listen to that. You're like, Die Hard. Like you're from Boston. So fucking Die Hard, right? It was fucking wicked pisser that's Die Hard. Because John McClane, he ran into a building, he fucking shot the gun. It's it's fucking crazy, man.
So the first movie directed by John McTiernan, who also did Predator, actually right before he did this film. He wanted to make a film based upon an everyman. I guess Johnny Everyman.
Yeah, Johnny McClane Everyman.
Johnny McClane Everyman going against a bunch of terrorists as a more of a believable storyline. In which he's just in the wrong place at the wrong time. He has to deal with a bunch of people. You know, who's... I forgot exactly what they were doing. Trying to get bonds.
Yeah, they're stealing bonds.
They're stealing bonds, if I remember. And... outnumbered. Completely outnumbered. And the first thing he does is he actually tries to get in contact with the police. If anyone remembers that. John McClane doesn't just go out there and blast everyone and save the day. He originally tries to get in contact with the police to bring in backup. To let people know what's happening. And it didn't work out the way he planned. Eventually, he does get Carl Winslow there.
Well, doesn't he try to get their attention by throwing a body out the window?
Yeah. Because originally, first he does, it sets off a fire alarm or something.
Yeah.
And they call it as a false alarm. By the way, just throw it out there. The main villain is Hans Gruber.
Yeah.
Also known as Snape.
Yeah, Professor Snape. Or the myriad of other films he's in.
Yeah. But anyway, whole idea of it is, he calls in backup by set up an alarm. Hans calls in an alarm that's false. So they eventually send a unit that's in the area.
Yeah.
And he shows up and he doesn't get his attention by throwing a body out the window. And which causes the whole media craze and bringing in the police try to get inside the building. It was a lot of action in the film. And it was a lot of him trying to get help from the outside. But realizing eventually he has to do stuff all on his own. And I'm getting into that because later on when we get to A Good Day to Die Hard, you can see what I mean, how the character actually changed over time from being a regular guy who needs help, but is stuck in a situation which he has to do everything on his own, to being fucking invincible. So... move on for the first movie. The first movie was amazing. Hans was a memorable bad guy. That's not just one scene, just throw it out there. There is one scene in which Hans goes to find John and pretend he's a regular guy.
Yeah.
But Hans has talked to him on the radio constantly throughout the movie. So showing up and try to put on a different accent, but fucking failing to put on a different accent. John sees through his bullshit. He kind of makes you wonder, why did Hans think that was going to work in the first place?
I figured John McClane gives him an empty gun. Yeah. He's like, watch my back. I think he was just doing that in general. Like, I think even if it was a regular dude, he probably would have given him an empty gun anyways.
Yeah.
So I think it was just... I don't want to say luck, but I think he planned ahead for that.
But he did actually call him Hans. After he realized the gun is empty, he says to him, like... I forgot exactly what it says to him, but he calls him Hans. He knows it's Hans.
Yeah, that's when he references it.
Yeah.
I think it's because the guy was like, let's go... Because doesn't he say, let's go somewhere?
Yeah.
Like, let's go to this floor.
Yeah, and then John looks at the little board to see who works there.
Mm-hmm.
And to see which name he'll choose. Like, he knew there was something wrong with him.
Yeah.
Being a cop, being a detective, actually. He knew there was something wrong with him. But great movie, great action. Regular guy in a terrible situation, had to get through it. He does, at the very end of it, he's broken, battered, bruised up. And you actually feel like, yes, you can tell that he's been through so much and he's actually in pain right now. But, you know, he's back with his wife. And I should do a little bit of background for the character. Whereas the reason why he's going to L.A. to visit his wife, the whole situation of mentioning that he was stubborn when his wife moved away to take the job that she took because he figured she was going to fail to come back to New York, and she didn't. So the whole thing was him just being kind of a flawed character, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Too stubborn to really, too stubborn for his own good, basically.
And they also have the classic scene of him walking through the glass to set up he's a regular dude.
Yeah.
You know, he can't really, like, take an ass whooping the way other action stars of the time could.
Yeah. And the whole thing about it, you know, of course, Bruce Willis doing moonlighting, it was the idea of bringing in a regular person to be a regular character, put in a extreme situation, which does make you actually feel like, how would you take it if you were in this situation? There's a lot of times you actually put yourself in John McClane's shoes and realize that.
Or
non-shoes.
Yeah.
You really want to get into that. And think about how you would react to that kind of situation.
I don't know, probably not well. I probably wouldn't think of taping a gun to my back.
There's a lot of things I probably wouldn't have done that he did.
Like just jumping off the roof with the fire hose.
I'm like, I'm too fat for that. Fuck that.
I don't think I could be able to hold on this. Fuck. Yes. Or, was it grenades? When he threw the guy down the elevator shaft?
No, that was C4. He taped C4. Well, he put C4 under a computer monitor and wrapped it up to a chair and then threw it down the elevator shaft.
Yeah.
The mass amount of destruction he did from this fucking building.
Ah, they can afford it.
Yeah, I mean, he saved a lot of lives, but goddamn, one person did so much.
And it wasn't just all action. It had its moments of humor and stuff.
Yeah, he was a smartass at times. He was talking shit. He had great chemistry with Hans.
Well, like, even all the other people. Like, when they're having, I think, the gunfight, and Mako eats the Snickers bar.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. There's a lot of good moments in the movie. A lot of classic moments. Now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho. And that one moment in which Jerry Cantrell. I was just calling him Jerry Cantrell. I can't remember his name. He's like Dutch Jerry Cantrell to me.
Yeah.
From Alice in Chains. When, he comes back into the room in front of all the hostages. He's knocking over stuff. And John's wife's like, he's still alive because only John can make someone that angry.
Well, there's also like a scene where people are doing it and we see boobs for whatever reason, because apparently every movie in the 80s had to have boobs in it.
I don't remember. Oh, no, they stumbled in about to do it, but they didn't. I don't think they showed boob. However, they did in fact show boob on a poster. There was a poster in the background. That in the middle of all the chaos, he walks past it two times, and both times he stops and looks at those titties before he continues doing what he's doing.
I guess I might as well say I haven't seen the movies in a really long time.
I mean, I actually prepared for this. I saw a couple of them. I get a chance to finish watching all of them, but that wasn't my original intention. But I do remember most of it, so. Yeah, Die Hard 1, not going to spend much time on it because I spent way too much time already. Good movie. Really enjoyed it. Still holds up. I actually watched it in Blu-ray for the very first time. Besides one scene, which you kind of see that it's a stunt double, It still holds up. And even so, Bruce Willis is not going to fall down some fucking stairs.
Yeah, they're not going to fucking take a gamble on their main, the lead actor to fucking do a stunt.
Not like that, so.
He's no Jackie Chan.
Yeah, so other than that, amazing film. I've already talked about it before in another show, like another episode we've done before. How I mentioned that it's the movie that actually got me into the regular guy being in an extreme situation. And it even spawned a lot of movies of regular guys being in extreme situations, which we've seen later after Die Hard. Even this year, I think it's a book called Olympus Has Fallen. That's the name of it. It's like a movie about the president being held hostage in the White House itself, and Gerald Butler plays a character who's kind of down on his luck, who has to protect him.
Well, I haven't even heard of this movie.
Yeah, it's coming out this year. I actually saw the trailer. Ironically, well, I went to go see A Good Day to Die Hard.
Oh, that's probably why I don't know about it.
Yeah, so it's the idea of it. These movies have been popped out afterwards of a guy, the one guy that has to save the day after Die Hard came out.
Yeah, but that's with any kind of movie.
Yeah, that's with any kind of movie. Anything that comes out.
Like Harry Potter comes out, they're going to try to find the next kid franchise.
Yeah, so it's always going to happen. You know, there's always going to be a situation of them trying to find the next of whatever's good out there. But it's the movie that spawned it back in the time in which there's nothing but action heroes who are flawless. Even so, John McTiernan actually did Predator right before this film. And if you go back and watch Predator, it's one of the first movies, and probably, I want to say the only movie that did this, but one of the first movies that had Arnold actually thinking and trying to outthink his adversary, I guess you could say.
He didn't outthink anybody in Conan?
No.
Are you sure?
Well, maybe. It's been a while.
I don't know.
I've been punching a camel.
Yeah. And fucking cutting off Falsa Doom's head.
Yeah.
And it didn't take one hit. He had to, like, chop away at his fucking neck.
Yeah, because the whole movie, going back to Predator, it's a lot of, let's just shoot this motherfucker. And it's not working out for them the way they planned. And Arnold sets up traps. He does different things to eventually take them on head on. Uses, like, the mud as camouflage. Doesn't use a gun because he knows the gun is recognizable as a weapon, which is the main reason why the Predator is killing people in the first place. So he had to outthink the Predator. So he took Arnold, a guy who's known for that big, dumb action, and been more of a thicker character for this film. So he took a person who's not known for action and made more into more of an action hero. And even so, the character and the actor, Bruce Willis at the time, we wouldn't have never thought of him as being in a role like this.
Yeah, Bruce Willis was a comedian,
yeah,
most of all, to people at that time.
So yeah, so basically the idea of it is, it's the beginning of a franchise. Actually, it started out to be just a one-shot movie, but it turned out to be the beginning of a franchise. And like Hollywood normally does with anything that turns out really well, see Taken or Taken Part 2, they always try to rehash what they've already done into another movie to start maybe like two movies, a trilogy or so, just to cash in on it. So that's how we got Die Hard 2, Die Harder, which is basically the same kind of story, just slightly condensed a little. He's in Washington, I think.
Is he in Washington? I just know he's at the airport.
I can't remember exactly where he's at. I think he's in Washington. In which he's there. He's at the airport. Terrorist shit happens. They're basically trying to free a general who's convicted of crimes. And you may know the general as the original Django.
Franco Nero.
Yeah, Franco Nero's in the movie as the general. And they have planes circling around the airport. They have everything shut off where they can't land, and they're running out of fuel. And John McClane only has 58 minutes to actually save the day. And of course, it's a good movie. It's one of my least favorite, simply because different director. The director went on to do other stuff. Rennie Harlan is his name. He went on to do Cliffhanger. And he also, before that, did Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4, Dream Master.
Yeah, that was his first movie.
Yeah, so he actually went on to make another Die Hard light film. He did 12 Rounds.
With John Cena. With John Cena,
so. So his work is kind of spotty. He's done some good things. He's done some bad things. He made Cutthroat Island.
Yeah, that's also a terrible film.
Yeah, but he also did Long Kiss Goodnight.
I think he was married to Gina Davis at the time.
Could have been. I don't know. I don't really know too much about him. I know his work is very spotty.
Yeah, it is.
So he did Die Hard 2, Die Harder. And he added a lot of elements that were kind of impossible. You always bring up the airplane ejector seat scene.
Yeah.
Which it totally fucking forever for these grenades to go off. They're just chucking these grenades over and over. He has time to get up, buckle himself up, make sure everything's safe, and then eject. It's just...
And then it's a terrible green screen.
It's a terrible green screen. There's a twist in the story in which they bring in some military people to help with the terrorists. We find out the military people are actually working for the terrorists.
Mm.
And they're like, who are you fooling? There's only the airport security and shit. It's like, there's no one for them to go through this elaborate scheme for. They felt like, why not just kill everybody? If you had that much manpower, which you can figure an entirely different team coming in to assist him, and they had this elaborate gun battle with the other terrorists with nothing but blanks to fool everyone. Like, why are you going to these extreme lengths to, like, actually fool everyone if he's just, you know, what's the point of it?
I don't know. Like, I feel like Die Hard 2 can be summed up in, I think it might have been on the poster, but I know somebody says it at one point, of how can the same thing happen to the same guy twice.
Also, that's a big theme in the movie. The entire movie is him calling back to the first one. He's like, every Christmas.
Yeah.
And, you know, he actually does say that line. I got the same DM to the same guy twice. And, you know, I've done this before. It's a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. But I just couldn't remember if it was on the poster or not. I think something like that was on the poster.
I think it was actually on the poster. But it's a lot of the same thing, just rehashed. That's one of the reasons I don't like Die Hard 2 as much as the rest of them. It's just, the movie's not bad. It has some cheesy moments. But overall, as an action movie, it's a really good action movie. And it feels really good as a Die Hard sequel. But it's more of a callback. It's kind of like Escape from New York and Escape from L.A. Whereas Escape from L.A. is a sequel to Escape from New York, but basically it's just a remake in general of Escape from New York.
I haven't seen Escape from L.A.
If you've seen Escape from New York, you've seen Escape from L.A.
That's all I've seen it then?
Basically. All the difference is you missed out on
Bruce Campbell?
Well, no, yeah, Bruce Campbell and fucking...
Surfing?
Yeah, surfing with the original Captain America.
Oh, fucking... Oh, man.
Pam Grier is what I was going for as well. You miss Pam Grier being a dude.
Oh, man. I don't know what I'm supposed to say.
A dude that had a sex change, basically, with a deep voice.
Was it a fake deep voice, or was she just putting on a deep voice?
It's not like she was putting on a deep voice. She was all like, hey, what's going on? Snake, you owe me money. It's like, oh, come on, Pam. You're better than this. But yeah. Oh, back to Die Hard. It's a good sequel. It's not the best. It was a money grab, but for what it was pretty decent. Going to part 3 in 1995, they actually brought back the original director. And I don't know what it is about him. I guess he gets the character. It seems like every time, both times he's directed Bruce Willis as John McClane, he actually brought in a little bit more of a character and him being more human, I guess you could say.
I mean, it could also have to do with the fact that Rennie Harlan... probably at that time still a director for hire.
Yeah.
So they were just handing him scripts and he was like, fuck it, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And who knows how many movies he's done. Because I was going to say Freddy 4, but wasn't Nightmare on Elm Street 4 like closer to the 90s?
Yeah.
So they were probably closer together. I feel like maybe John McTiernan had the ability to rewrite the script or say he was going to do something.
Yeah, add a little bit more. Because it feels like... I don't know, it's like they have a lot of backstory in part 3 that wasn't in the second one, but you can feel a little bit of it in the first one. Like the whole idea of it, because in the first one when Bruce Willis is pulling up, John McClane's pulling up in a limo, he's talking to the limo driver, asking him about his marriage, just so you get a little bit more information on that things went kind of south with his marriage. And he's kind of seeing it unfold on screen.
Which is the first one to reference his kids.
Yeah, it's the first one references kids, and they show both his kids playing together with the nanny watching them.
Mm.
And part 3, they kind of bring up his marriage again. It starts off with him being a drunk who's been suspended. They haven't really mentioned why he was suspended. But they have to dust him off and bring him back because there's a villain out there blowing up shit. Which has, like, actually, let me get off the subject for a moment. The movie starts off with a fucking explosion. That's the very first fucking thing that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Starts off showing the city, and then a big, massive, practical explosion happens. One of the best explosions I've seen, like, in a long time, considering that we live in this day and age for most everything CG. Cars are just fucking flying, man. I mean, it's ridiculous how action-packed the very beginning of this movie is. And then you have to bring them in, because the main villain, who they think is just a regular terrorist, asked for McClane to be there. And he doesn't know what's going on. He's hungover. He's been drinking the night before. He gained a little bit of weight. You know, not too much. But you can see his hair kind of balding a little more. You can see he's not in his best condition, I guess you could say. This is actually a little bit before Bruce Willis starts shaving his head. Yeah, but Dillis, no, they dust him off. They bring him back in. And he gets word that he has to wear a sign that says robot.
Yeah.
In Harlem. He's like, he doesn't understand why he has to do it or why they're forcing him to do it. But he knows that, okay, there's a bomber that went off, killed a bunch of people. He needs to do it to save lives. So they put him out there. He runs into Samuel L. Jackson, which I thought was brilliant that that actually made him a racist.
Samuel L. Jackson?
Yeah, because this is Samuel coming off of Pulp Fiction. I guess in a way to tackle the idea of reverse racism, I guess you could say.
I don't know. I don't think this is the first movie to do that.
I don't think it's the first movie, but I thought it was kind of cool to have two characters who one of them clearly you know is not racist at all.
Mm.
And one of them is seriously racist.
Well, I think it's a different dynamic. Like, you team him up with somebody
yeah.
who doesn't like him. As compared to, like, in the first one where everybody's trying to help him out. You know, Carl Winslow, the limo driver.
Yeah. So, like, it's the idea of how they play off each other. That's one thing that's pretty cool. And they're forcing a situation in which they have to actually work together. And they have some great chemistry together. Samuel L. and Bruce Willis have, like, some kind of chemistry where they just, like, really connect with each other the entire film. And you want to see them make it to the very end. You want to see the stuff they go through. And they're playing these games they're forced to play until eventually they find out, well, John finds out, like, well, this is going on. I need to stray away from this game they're making us play. They actually find this motherfucker. And the main bad guy, Simon Gruber.
Yeah, he's Hans' brother.
Hans' brother. I couldn't think of his middle name. He has a middle name that I totally forgot.
Okay.
Yeah, Simon Gruber. They find out that he's Hans' brother. And he's actually getting revenge. And it links directly to the first one. Also, you get a lot of dialogue between Samuel and Bruce about McClane's family. What happened with his wife. How he hasn't called his wife in a year or so. Because of pride. It's back to that pride that he had in the first one. Of just not doing what could actually resolve the issue because he's too stubborn to do it. And you get Samuel and Linda McCorder telling him to call his wife. And just them connected with each other. Actually becoming friends. Despite all that stuff. Then also, you get a strong bad guy. You get other stuff happening that's nothing to do with John McClane. It's interesting. They bring in another team. There's like there's two other cops who are actually evacuating the schools because Simon says that there's a bomb inside one of the schools. So they have to evacuate search every school and evacuate that particular one.
Mm-hmm.
As they're doing that, you get to get a little bit of them working together. You get a little bit of a bomb expert trying to defuse the bomb. They brought in more characters. He said he was more of a cast. And while he's doing this thing, there's other people you follow every once in a while. There is a feeling of this whole thing being a team effort to stop this one guy. Instead of just John being by himself. And that's pretty interesting to see. And the whole movie just flowed together better. To be honest, at times watching Die Hard with a Vengeance, I actually enjoyed it a lot more recently than actually watching the original. And I know it's kind of hard to say. I mean, the action scenes are on par. There's a lot of explosions, but everything seems more practical and real. The situations he's put into seem just as dangerous as the first one. But, you know, he has to overcome, just like the first one. And it actually fits a better sequel. And in a way, since it is an actual direct sequel, it just fits a lot better than Die Harder or any of the rest of the films that they made afterwards. But it's an amazing movie to visit again. I actually appreciate it a lot more now than I did back when I actually saw it when it first came out.
Yeah, but when you saw it when it first came out, you were what, 12?
Yeah, but I saw it countless times after that. But I guess taking a break from it and then seeing it now in 2012.
In a post 9/11 world?
Yeah, post 9/11 world. It fits. It fits a lot better, I guess you could say, into the like modern time. It does. Like, watching the original now, it's still a classic, but it does fit into those 80s kind of movies. Where if you're watching now, it fits into that world. Whereas, like, watching Die Hard with a Vengeance actually does fit into this modern time. It does still seem relevant. And I just love this movie. I really do love this movie. I love the way the characters play off of each other. Mm. It's just really put together very well. It's like the director actually understands his character. Completely understands his character. Knows how to make this character work. And then we find out later on, no one else does. We move on to the fourth film, Live Free or Die Hard. It's not a bad movie. I enjoyed it the first time I saw it. I actually enjoyed it the first three times I saw it. But I understood that it was a PG-13 movie because it had to be a PG-13 movie for them to make their sales. It really didn't have to, but for the studio, they had to push that because they felt no one's going to see a rated R Die Hard film in this day and age where most movies are PG-13 and more accessible to everyone.
Well, I don't think they thought no one would see a rated R Die Hard. I think they thought we'll make more money with a PG-13.
Yeah, we'll make more money this way. Well, the move to turn it to PG-13 kind of hurt the film a little. It hurt the film too much. But the way the director, Len Wiseman, actually tackled the film, he tackled it like a PG-13 film. But only added slight little elements for a rated R. Simply because he knew that the movie was going to eventually be released as an unrated film.
Did he know that?
Yeah, that was the whole purpose of it. They had him to film the movie kind of like neutral, where either or, certain slight little scenes could be swapped out for a rated R film.
I don't know. I feel like because I remember at the time he was like, you know, I'm not going to try to make a PG-13 Die Hard.
He fucking did.
Yeah, that's a goddamn lie. Like, he could have just had somebody say fuck right away. And then boom, PG-13. Or rated R.
Yeah.
But that's not what we got. I think he made a...
costly decision.
Purposefully made a PG-13 movie. And then shot a few scenes for the unrated.
Yeah. And we watched the unrated version. I saw both. I saw the original PG-13. I thought it was a good movie for what it was as a PG-13 film. I hate the fact that it did censor when he says Yippee-ki-yay motherfucker at the end.
Mm.
I believe they had one fuck in the movie. It should have been right there.
Aren't you allowed one fuck?
You are allowed one fuck. There's no other fucks in that movie. So,
but it can't. But I don't think it can reference like the act of fucking.
Yeah,
it has to just be in like an expletive.
Yeah. So if you call somebody a motherfucker, maybe he's not really talking about fucking your mother.
Yeah, but you know what? The fucking MPAA take it however they want.
Yeah, so I guess you know. I feel like you couldn't throw in that Yippee-ki-yay the motherfucker. They should cancel out the whole thing of it being PG-13.
Yeah, should have just been R.
Yeah, but they went with it anyway, because, you know, they love money. And we got a movie that's kind of, I don't know what to say about it, man. It's like, for the movie, what it is, as an action film, it's pretty good. The concept of John McClane being a guy who's out there doing his thing in a technically advanced world that what he's used to. It's pretty cool. The fact that we may not need that one guy out there running around doing stuff anymore. It's pretty cool that they stated that and they kind of went through that. They put fucking Kevin Smith in the movie for some reason.
Because we all needed that.
Yeah, and it's the idea of, you know, the concept they had was pretty good. The way they executed was pretty good. The main villain, he wasn't as strong as you know, Hans Orange's brother, Simon.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't as forgettable as the main villain for part two. So it's like,
who was the main villain for part two? Wasn't that a name actor too?
Yeah, I can't even remember, man. But you know, it flowed together as a good movie. But the whole time watching the PG-13 version, I was like, okay, when they get the unrated version, I'm gonna check that out, and I know that's gonna be the version I buy. And I did buy it. And I was disappointed. It's not that much added to the unrated version. There's CGN blood. A couple of blood scenes that were cut out that really didn't make anything to make or break the movie if they were in there or not.
Mm.
Some of the dialogue is completely different. It's simply just throwing in like a slight little curse word or so. It wasn't even that serious. And the way it was edited, it seemed like it was voiced over. You'll see that like his voice doesn't really match what he's saying.
Yeah.
A lot of times. And it's like, I don't know. It was really a studio job by a studio director.
I feel like, I don't know. Right away, the PG-13 thing should have been a warning that this isn't going to be the Die Hard you think it is.
But John McClane's attitude was in it. You got enough of John McClane in the film.
But at the same time, like, this movie came out, what, like 2005?
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of the director's other work. Yeah, like, I haven't seen Total Recall yet. But it kind of reminded me of Underworld, as you said before. Mm. It's action and it's cool scenes happening, but who gives a shit?
Yeah. It's like, I don't love it. I don't hate it. It's kind of meh.
Yeah. All right, so...
But it's like, with fucking... What is it? Live Free, Die Hard?
Yeah.
It was one of those, like, if it's all about cyber terrorism and fucking, like, computer shit, John McClane doesn't know any of that. Does he really need to be in that story?
He doesn't. I mean, it's... I understand what they're saying. If you're going to make a new Die Hard, why not address those kind of things?
Yeah, but he doesn't know that world, so why would you even bother?
That's why I teamed him up with the Mac guy.
Yeah, because he was in computer commercials.
Yeah, they're like, oh, then everyone knows him for computer commercials. He'll totally be a computer hacker. Was it Justin Long?
Yeah.
This movie's not a bad movie.
But it's not a good movie.
It's a good movie, but it's not a Die Hard movie. It doesn't feel like a true Die Hard movie. There's sprinkles of Die Hard in there for you to enjoy, and it does fit into the Die Hard world to a certain extent if this is the Die Hard we're getting in this generation. But it doesn't feel like a Die Hard that I enjoy a lot. Now, I actually like the movie now way more than I did before, because I felt like, man, it can't get any worse than this, and then it fucking did.
Alright, should we start off by saying that you're going to spoil stuff? You know what, maybe you should give a short review first, and then we can get into a spoiler-filled review.
Alright. Going to a good day to Die Hard.
I like the... like, right in the middle, like, even saying the title pissed me off.
Going into this movie, Ashley was watching the older ones, getting psyched, and then, of course, I usually read reviews of the movie I want to review before it gets released or before I see it. So that way I get other people's ideas and know what to look for and to prove them wrong if I want to.
Yeah, but shouldn't you go in with an open mind and then form your own ideas, then go back and review?
I do, but I don't try to read any spoilers. Just kind of read read what people said about the movie without any spoilers or knowing anything about the story in general at all.
Yeah, but you could have made up your mind going into the movie.
Yeah, but trust me, they don't affect my mind at all. Like, for example, I went to go see Alice Cross. I read nothing but horrible reviews about Alice Cross. But when I went to go see it, I enjoyed the movie for what it was.
A terrible movie?
It's not terrible, but it's horribly written.
And acted and filmed. And
I think the acting and the filming were perfect. It's just the story wasn't all that good. But we're getting off subject. Basically, I felt like A Good Day to Die Hard is going to get bashed because over time, people turned against Live Free or Die Hard. And people started bashing it.
Well, I don't think it was great to begin with. I don't think anyone went out on a ledge to defend it.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people give it a lot of good reviews when it first came out. Then over time, it became a situation of, it's not that good or it sucks and blah, blah, blah.
Hopefully people will come around to The Dark Knight Rises the same way.
Yeah.
Where they can finally admit, not a good movie.
Probably. Maybe it's just you.
Is it though?
Nah, I believe there's other people. But anyway, I felt like it wasn't going to get a fair shake because of the fact that the last movie, people didn't like it, or they grew not to like it, so I figured they're going to just compare the two, and it's not going to get a fair shake. So, reading reviews about it, it was universally panned by everyone. I'm like, holy shit, you know, it's a Die Hard movie, it can't be that bad. And even if you read the original reviews of Live Free or Die Hard, it's nothing but positive stuff. Everyone wants you might get like a bad review.
Mm.
But this was just completely panned. But no one was going into like any kind of specific details of stuff they didn't like about the film. Maybe here or there every once in a while.
Well, you can't give away plot points in a quick review. Like,
yeah. But it was being panned. I was like, it can't be that bad. I was like, it's a situation of, I just watched all these films to get back up.
Oh no, I've wasted my time.
I can't back up now. I can't back out. I gotta see this movie. So I was like, I gotta do this. I have to go through with it. And I want to be just and fair with it. And if I like it, for whatever reason, I'll state why I like it. I'll state people who are wrong. I'll get into the idea of like how the real actual film is. And then I went in there agreeing with everything everyone said. Except, I felt the need to actually be honest and tell you what's wrong with the film. Instead of dancing around it, I'll actually tell you what's wrong with the film. I have to make notes to do this because of the simple fact of if I didn't, I would completely forget this film.
All right, so let's get a quick, like, I don't know, review, star rating, and then we can spoil the shit out of it.
I'll give it a star rating at the very end of this.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
All right.
But basically, going into the movie, it's not a Die Hard movie at all.
Wait, but I feel like you should give a star rating now, because what if someone's like, I still want to see it?
Well, if I have to do it now, it's a fucking one. Jeez. It's a fucking one. I debated whether I wanted to give it a two or a one, but it comes down to the fact that they didn't try that hard to actually make this movie. I'm not going to try that hard to fucking review it. So I'll give it a one.
Jesus. I don't think I've given anything a one.
This is my first one. I've never given anything a one ever. See, think about it. Even if it wasn't named Die Hard, it's just a bad movie. Mm-hmm. Having Bruce Willis in it makes it a better movie. Barely. Barely makes it a better movie. Naming it Die Hard makes it a better movie. If it was just a regular movie with Bruce Willis in it and not named Die Hard,
it would still suck.
It would suck so much that people wouldn't have paid it any kind of fucking attention.
It would be like, what's the name of that movie where it's kind of like Avatar before there was Avatar?
What do you mean?
Okay, he's a cop in the future where everybody kind of controls robots that move around and stuff. That, like, go around and do things in place of real humans.
Oh, Surrogate.
There it is. So it would be like a Surrogate?
Not really, because I actually like Surrogates. Even though it was directed by the same guy that gave us Terminator 3. Actually, still kind of liked it. You know, I guess he only does stuff with robots nowadays.
But maybe.
Alright, so this is a solid one star. There's no way around that. Premise of the story, John McClane's son gets in trouble, as you already know. He works for the CIA. He does some shit that doesn't make any sense. And John McClane has to go there to basically do whatever. They don't really say what he's doing. He's going to go help his son, but you don't know exactly what he's going to do to help him.
Isn't he on vacation?
Yeah, he's on vacation. He lets you fucking know he's on vacation.
Yeah, so, I heard.
But I'll get into later on.
I guess I should say that I haven't seen the movie, and I'm going all off of reviews and shit that I've read.
So he goes to try to help his son. Shit gets out of hand. Get the team up to do whatever. And at the very end of the movie, everything's resolved.
Oh, I guess we also didn't mention his daughter was in part 4.
His daughter was in part 4, and she makes a cameo. Well, not really a cameo. She's at the very beginning of A Good Day to Die Hard, and she's at the very end.
Yeah.
So, and she's like, gives her a little line. She's like, I wish I could go with you. He's like, nah, it's fine. And she's like, don't get into trouble or something like that.
In this new one?
Yeah, in the new one.
Is it Mary Elizabeth Winstead still? She's not a great actress.
Well, she doesn't have to do much.
I figure, no, I mean, like, even in part 4. I feel like maybe she just doesn't choose movies where she gets to do anything. Like, the only thing I liked her in was Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, she was amazing in that. But then she had to do it. She didn't have to do that much, but be the cool chick.
Mostly. Yeah. She had to be the manic pixie dream girl.
Yeah. Yeah, but basically, that's the whole premise of the story. And the reason I say I don't know what the fuck's going on, I'll get to that later. Here's what the notes I've made. For people who want to see this movie, but have heard nothing but bad things about the movie, but haven't really heard anything clear on why the movie's bad.
Can you kind of take us in order of the movie?
I could do that.
And go notes, like, as they come in the movie?
Okay, first thing that happens... Well, you want me to actually tell the entire movie?
Yeah, I figure if people are going to listen to this, they're not going to watch a goddamn movie. Alright. And you've already said one, so who gives a shit,
and, right? And the main reason for us doing this show is to make sure that if you watch a movie, you don't waste your time or you know what you're getting into.
Don't waste your time or your money.
Yeah, we waste our money to make sure you don't fucking bother. Alright, so the movie starts off... I'm not going to remember everything.
That's fine. I'll be honest.
The movie starts off with Jack shooting someone. And you don't know why he shot this person. And they... No, oh, fuck all this. I'm not gonna go scene by scene.
All right, fuck it.
Please. It's too much chaos, dude.
It is. Let's just hear the notes, then. It's just too much chaos.
It's too much fucking chaos for me to go scene by scene for this movie. And you know we love going scene by scene. It's just too much fucking chaos. I'll just start with my notes. these are exactly in order, but they're very much in order to a certain point. First thing is, John is not involved with this film. Nothing that happens in this film has anything to do with John McClane. Everything's playing out on his own, involving Jack, and John's there, basically trying to catch up most of the time, not really knowing what's going on, and just involving himself because simply it's his son. He has no connection to any of the villains there. He has no connection to anything that's going on around him at all. And he feels out of place. It feels like this movie could have been just as good, I guess. If you call it good. It would have been exactly the same if John McClane never would have came to Russia. In fact, John McClane actually fucks up stuff by coming to Russia. It makes things a lot more difficult than what it needed to be. So he kind of gets in the way at the very beginning, as you'll see. If you ever do watch this movie, Jack busting this criminal out of jail, well, out of the court, and he has his mission to actually get him to his partner, to give him a deal and all this stuff supposed to happen, but John shows up, and everything just goes to fucking hell, and the whole thing is ruined, but then the plot is already ruined, because it's just a terrible movie, so it's hard to follow. So whatever. It would have been a bad movie with or without John McClane being in this movie. And he has no connection to anyone in the film. Besides his son. Who doesn't even fucking like him. Second thing. John is indestructible. I was talking Street Fighter indestructible. Street Fighter 4 indestructible.
So he's like the original Street Fighter 2 M. Bison. Just impossible to beat. Impossible to hurt.
Yes! Yes!
Of course.
Let me get into the shit that happens to John McClane in this film. The first thing that happens when he shows up in Russia is when everything goes down with him and his son drives off with the guy that he's taking with him. And then the bad guys are chasing his son. John steals a truck, starts driving the truck. Eventually, he flips over in the truck. Now, he flips over dramatically in the truck. It flies, it crashes to these other cars, it flips over these other cars. Gets out. Without a fucking scratch. Gets hit by another car. Gets up, jacks that car. Without a fucking scratch. Now he's driving. Chasing the bad guys down. You know, crashing into them. They get to this big fucking car chase. It's ridiculous. And then eventually he flips that vehicle with him inside of it. Gets out. Not a fucking scratch. Later on, little things happen to his son. He's bleeding for his nose, busted open and stuff. Same thing happens to John. Nothing happens to him. Like,
so his son didn't inherit the indestructible gene?
Yeah, so it wasn't like Wolverine and his son?
Yeah, Dokken.
Yeah, it's not the same thing. Not the same situation. So, also, there's one scene in which who you think is the main bad guy literally takes turns punching John and his son in the face and smacking him with a gun. His son, busted nose, all fucked up. John, nothing. Fucking nothing. Nothing happens to him. It took him running and jumping out of a fucking building and falling through like big 2x4s of wood consistently to hit the ground for him to have the first draw of blood in this fucking movie.
And was it like little? It was just like a scratch on his forehead?
It was the top of his head was bleeding down. And then that's where he finally bleeds. His son looks like he's been through like Die Hard 1 already. And John McClane, it looks like nothing happened to him. This is his first draw of blood. Second thing about the movie, well, no, this is not even the second thing. I just thought it was out there. I went to a place where you could actually eat while you're watching the film.
Mm-hmm. Similar to the Alamo Draft House?
Yeah. By the time I felt like the movie was starting to pick up, while I started to know what's going on, they brought me my fucking check. And I'm like, really? What? I was confused. Like, the movie's ending? It's just starting to pick up where it's starting to make sense.
Do they always bring you the check at the end?
Yeah, close around the end of the movie, the final act to bring you the check.
Oh, man.
So, and so, just to let you know, I got the check before John McClane actually shed any blood. So, I got my check before John McClane shed any blood. So, he's fucking indestructible. All right, the next thing. Mad close-ups. Okay, John Ward did... He did Max Payne right before this, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I like Max Payne. it's not a good movie, but I like it because of visual effects. Because
of how dumb it is?
Yeah, and how dumb it is. But I understand it's not a good movie. So, I wouldn't fault you if you hated the movie. Yeah, so he did Behind Enemy Lines, and he did Max Payne. Max Payne had great visuals. Behind Enemy Lines had this kind of raw, realistic look to it.
I don't think I've seen Behind Enemy Lines.
It's been a while, but I remember the way it looked. Because that's the one thing that drew me into the movie, is the way it looked. He makes beautiful looking movies. Mm. So, it looked raw and like you're there in the action. So, he had mad close-ups in this movie. The very beginning of it starts off looking different than you would normally see a Die Hard movie look. And it even flows in. The way it starts off is completely different than any other Die Hard movie. So it has its own kind of style to it. But it seems like a serious episode of 24 unfolding at the very beginning of it. Like, you see espionage stuff happening. They're zooming up on people's faces and zooming up on their hands. And it's a lot of zooming up, close-ups, to draw you into it, what's all going on around you. And at first, it's like, wow, he's really getting you into the story. And then it fucking continues for the rest of the movie. You're like, oh, God.
I get it.
Yes, this is intense. I get it. We're in the action. Come on, dude. Seriously. You know, cut that shit out. So, not as bad as everybody else in the movie. But it's one of the things I didn't like. Just pan it out a little. You know, don't fucking go all into it. And the reason how that comes into play... Next thing I have on my list, incoherent and overblown car chase. Because you know what? The close-ups don't stop on the people. When a big car chase happens, it goes on for, it seems like about 15 minutes or whatever. It seems like the car chase takes up most of the film, it feels like. He's zooming up on the vehicles, he's zooming up on like around them and on the people in the car. It's like so many times he's zooming up in the action, it makes it hard to know what the fuck's going on in the action. It's kind of those little quick cuts. Mm. Imagine those quick cut fights with vehicles.
Like from the Bourne series?
Yeah. And you just don't know what's going on. It's so incoherent of what's happening. And when cool stuff does happen, it's cool, but it's like, whatever. It's like not a big deal. And then cars just fucking fly in this movie.
Gravity doesn't take hold.
It's just fucking... It's like, they're just running the cars. They're just flying like... overblown flying in the air. It's totally ridiculous how cars are just flying and being launched. I give them props for doing it practical, but I would actually imagine the Incredible Hulk going out there throwing cars around, it looked more believable than the fucking vehicles crashing and making them fly everywhere. It's completely ridiculous. This is also the same scene in which John McClane gets into two car accidents. I think I told you.
Yeah.
He flips the car two times.
Gets out, gets hit by the car.
Yeah, all that. All that happens been the same car chase. It's all the same big ass overblown scene. It's ridiculous, man. It's action just to have action in it. The cursing in the movie as well just started out there, because the first he says to Jack is, Jack, what the fuck are you doing? It's like uninspired. Uninspired. There's cursing in this film that doesn't really feel like... They could have easily taken this cursing out the movie. I would prefer for them to actually made a PG-13 film.
Come on.
Yeah, to actually bullshit us by throwing these little mini curse words.
Yeah, but you wouldn't get yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Yeah, I'll get to that later. Jeez. I'll get to that later. So it was just ridiculous. But, you know, there was a couple of curse F-bombs thrown out there during the car chase. But it just didn't really feel like anyone really gave a shit. In fact, who you think is the main villain in it, who's being chased, it's fucking annoying. It feels like Jack's running from the terrorists in his vehicle. The terrorists are chasing him, and they're having like a party in their vehicle. They're like cracking jokes and like like being animated in their vehicle, and then
listening to music that's dropping the bass.
Yeah, and John McClane's on the phone with his daughter, telling her nothing's happening. Which I guess it's supposed to be funny, but it's just not executed funny. It's by the numbers. It's just fucking boring. And I'm just sitting there watching the car chase. Like, God, when is this fucking shit going to end? So I get some more story as to what the fuck's going on. Because at this time, the movie started off with Jack escaping the court. John coming to Russia. Car chase. There's no plot at this point. Speaking of villains, on my last thing on this list, no consistent main villain. There is not one consistent main villain in this movie. There's no Hans. There's no Simon. There's no guy for part two.
there's no Timothy Oliphant from part four, whatever his name was.
There's no consistent villain. It seems like you think the main villain is one guy. Turns out he's not. You think the main villain may be someone else. Turns out he's not. They're flip-flopping around with the villain. So there's no connection with John McClane and the main villain. It just feels like... there's times where... any other movie, someone may turn bad. You find it's a bad guy. In this movie, there are times they introduce you to someone. It turns out it's a bad guy. Like, they're like, hi, meet such and such. I'll just ruin this. Fuck it, I don't care. the guy they're with, the Russian guy they're with, that Jack's trying to protect, they take him to his daughter's house to pick up his daughter because they could kind of deal with him. His daughter's there. She's all like, hey, nice to meet you. She meets everyone. Next thing you know, the criminals come in. And she's like, I'm a bad guy. So it's like, you know, so I made a song for it. I just met you. And this is crazy, but I'm really a villain, so kill me, maybe.
Oh my god!
Because it doesn't make any sense, dude. Like, they don't give you build up to think anyone's a good guy. It's just like, hi, I just met you. Now I'm bad.
Hey, how's it going? Here, you're gonna go this way because I'm evil.
Also, I'm throwing. You know, also, let me go back to the action scenes, just for a quick moment. There's literally one point because some of the action scenes are lazy. The chase seemed lazy. The deliverance of certain lines by Bruce Willis was lazy. There's literally one point in which a bunch of bad guys bust out one door and start shooting, and his son drops down, and John picks up an automatic weapon and just shoots them. And he just stands there in one spot, aiming at the door, firing, as they just run through they just filter through his one door into his gun shots.
So it's like a shitty video game where they just kind of come out of one area?
Yeah,
everyone's... just stand there punching?
Yeah, everyone's come out of one area. He had to aim. He aims at that one area. Everybody comes out and just get hit. And it's a consistent wave of people coming out to get hit by his bullets. It's like... it's like a gun battle equation of a Bruce Lee fight. Where everyone's just taking their turn and running and get their ass beat. It's like that. Clearly, he just shot the other 20 guys, but...
This door. We have to go through this door.
There's no other way around inside this building, so just one door. We have to do it. We have to fucking do it.
We can't shoot through the door first. We have to run in, stop, then shoot.
Yeah, so it was just a wave of like guys coming in. He's just standing there and blasting. I'm like, that's not Die Hard.
Would you say it's a wave of mutilation?
Oh, also, that happens before he actually bleeds for the first time. So throw it out there. It's before he actually bleeds for the first time. So let me move on. Because I already said there's no consistent villain. You don't know who the main bad guy is to the very end. And you don't give a shit by that time. And their drive for what's going on with the bad guy. Because the bad guy is always changing. He always following different people. Their drive for doing what they're doing is completely different. Which hurts the film. So moving on. John is on vacation and really wants you to know. Every time he gets a chance, he's like, I'm on vacation. I'm on fucking vacation. I'm on vacation. The entire movie, he's letting you know he's on vacation. And here's the thing I figured out about that. I'm related to this movie, but still kind of the same thing. I looked into a lot of the beef behind Kevin Smith and Bruce Willis. And one of the things that Kevin Smith brought up was while filming Cop Out, there's a scene that Bruce Willis is supposed to say something. I can't remember exactly how it goes, but I think it goes like, I want my wife and kids, or something like that. And he said that they filmed that scene, and Bruce Willis says it, delivered it perfect. Then the next day, they filmed another scene, and Bruce Willis throws out there again, I want my wife and kids. He's like, wait, but it's not the same scene. What's he doing?
Yeah.
Is he forgetting the lines or whatever? So he said there's a couple of scenes throughout the whole time of filming that Bruce Willis would take it on his own to throw out, I want my wife and kids. And it would kind of fit with the scene, but not really be the same scene that they're filming. It was just kind of like whatever. And by this time, Kevin Smith was fucking afraid of him, so he didn't want to say anything to him.
Yeah.
But he kind of let him know, like, he eventually talked to him and said, why are you doing this? Why do you keep saying the same, you know, line over and over throughout the film? And Bruce said, he knew it was going to get cut for the film eventually. So he was throwing it out there at certain points for him to find which one he wants and wants to keep.
I mean, I guess that makes sense. It's kind of a dick move to pull, but at the same time, I guess it makes sense. It's sort of like how people riff, like, on set, where, you know, they'll just say something. If you've ever seen the TV show Twin Peaks,
yeah,
the actors would just, like, kind of say something about the set. Like, there's a scene where they're in a morgue, and they're looking at Laura Palmer's body, and one of the halogen lights above them is flickering, and they kind of have this, like, exchange back and forth about it. That was just something made up. And then the director, David Lynch, was just like, oh man, I like it, it's real, let's keep it in. So I guess it works, but I don't know. At the same time, I feel like maybe you shouldn't have done it so often.
Yeah, we did it a lot in Cop Out. They did eventually edit it out and keep the line, keep the time of use that they wanted to keep it, even though it didn't fit what they had written in the script. Mm-hmm. But I feel like maybe, just maybe, he did the same thing for A Good Day to Die Hard. He liked the I'm on vacation line. It just fucking melted throughout the entire movie. And because he wasn't working on, I hate to call Kevin Smith a professional. He's better than me. He's better, you know, than
any kind of... I mean, clearly, he's a fucking rich guy and shit.
But you would think someone else who's done other studio big films would actually have a better sense of directing than Kevin Smith. And cut this out of the film, if that's the case.
It could also be a studio thing. The studio probably cut it together the way they wanted it.
Yeah, cut it together the way they wanted it. I actually do feel like he didn't... It wasn't in the script that Bruce Willis said it on his own. If the Kevin Smith story is true, it kind of fits into that, I think.
I mean, it could be true. I mean, why would you just make something up?
Yeah. So I think he actually does say that a lot because he wants to say it a lot. And the studio was like, ah, fuck it, let's leave it in.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Hey, it'll be a new catchphrase. All the kids will be saying it.
Yeah, I'm on vacation, Mom. I never clear my room.
Yeah. And you know what? I also hate you, Mom.
Yeah.
Because apparently this movie will teach you hate your parents.
Yeah, I'll get to that in a moment.
Oh, shit. That's exactly what I didn't want to do.
But, yeah, it's just ridiculous, man. I mean, just repeating over and over. It wasn't funny the first time he said it. So it's like, you know, I say beating a dead horse.
Mm-hmm.
It's like beating a horse that was never alive in the first place. It's
like kicking a skeleton of a horse.
Yeah. It was just ridiculous, man. Like, by the fifth or sixth time he said it, I was like, seriously? It is a 97-minute movie? I gotta hear this over and over again.
Did it seem like the actor, Bruce Willis, was on vacation for the movie?
It seemed like it. I'll get into that later on as well.
Damn.
All right, next thing. What the fuck is this movie all about? I have no idea what this movie's all about. I understand. They start off with a certain idea that they're actually using. I try not to ruin the movie a lot, even though I am ruining the movie by saying a lot of things. But they start off with one idea, basically.
Well, just ruin it. We already said spoilers.
All right. They start off with one idea. This guy is basically a criminal, but he actually started off. Well, he actually had a partnership with the president. Well, not the president, but someone within politics, basically.
In Russia, like the premier or something?
Yeah, someone within politics. And they had a falling out, so that guy was trying to bury him in the court system. In which Jack was supposed to... He killed someone to get himself thrown in to the court with him. Because he was going to testify that guy hired him to kill that person he killed. And that was his way of getting in, to get him out of the court system. So that way he could get him to his partner with the CIA to cut a deal against that politician about some of the stuff he did. And he'll be able to get his daughter.
Stop right there. I no longer care about the plot of this movie.
Exactly.
That sounds needlessly complicated.
Exactly. And you know what? All that is scrapped for an entire different story. I thought, if you wouldn't let me finish explaining that, I would have pissed you off even more with how they got rid of all that storyline. Basically, it starts off a certain way, and then eventually ends up with them going out to uranium in Chernobyl. So, you piece together how that happened. And you know, it's ridiculous. So, what the fuck is this movie all about? I have no idea. I just saw it. I sat there watching it, trying to figure it out, piece it together. Don't know.
And since you'll probably never see it again, you'll never know.
Here's the next thing. John McClane is not in this film. Bruce Willis is.
So John, what, he like does a lot of mugging to the camera and shit?
John McClane's a character. And the worst thing I ever did for this film is actually watch all the original Die Hards going into it. You get more John McClane in Little Fear of Die Hard than you ever did in this film. He never gets angry. He's always calm. He just doesn't run around that much until like shit gets really serious, like a helicopter flying around trying to shoot him. Mainly, like I said, his action scenes are just him standing still shooting a big gun. There's not that much going on. I don't really feel like you're actually watching John McClane. There's no baggage. There's nothing.
It's not kinetic at all.
Yeah, he's just kind of walking around doing whatever. There's no catchphrases or anything. He's not really being funny. He's not being a smartass. He has no one to communicate with to be a smartass like the original villains. It feels much like you're watching Bruce Willis just be Bruce Willis. And not even exciting Bruce Willis like you would get for like Expendables 2. Or at least the first fucking Expendables.
So the original Expendables was a better Bruce Willis movie, I guess?
Yeah. Than this movie.
Where he showed up for like 3 minutes.
It feels like Bruce Willis was having... It feels like Bruce Willis woke up and was like, fuck, I gotta film Die Hard. And just phoned in the entire fucking movie. I wouldn't be surprised if it was really like a fucking stunt double.
It was his stand-in? Like
stand-in the entire film.
They just film over the stand-in shoulder?
Yeah, because Bruce has been making some questionable films lately. He's been doing a lot of films that were straight to DVD, which is kind of weird for an actor like him to do that. There's people who have done straight to DVD films and then, you know, still did. Like, for example, Samuel L. dropped a straight to DVD film that wasn't really that good. But he's in the fucking Avengers. He's doing other stuff. Samuel L. just likes to work.
Yeah, he did other shit like, what's the one where the white dude and the black chick are married and Samuel L. hates that shit?
Lakeview Terrence.
Yeah, like that. He, you know, yeah. Or Michael Caine will just make whatever.
Yeah. Certain people do certain things because they like the character.
They have fun.
Or like they have fun. And Bruce Willis has just been doing whatever. Like, he's been doing Nicolas Cage work, I guess.
Yeah, but he was in Looper last year.
Yeah, which makes no sense for him to fucking be doing straight-to-DVD movies and then phoning in a fucking Die Hard. The main thing that everyone knows him for, he fucking phoned it in.
Yeah, you would think he'd care about that.
Yeah, another thing that's funny, going back to Kevin Smith as well. Kevin Smith told a story about how he was hanging out with Bruce Willis, and a bunch of fans drove by. They were screaming at Bruce, like, yeah, Die Hard, you know, cheering. Yeah. And Kevin got excited because he was a big Bruce Willis fan at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He looks over to Bruce, and he's like, isn't that cool? Everyone recognizes you? And he said, Bruce said, I hate the ones that say Die Hard the most.
Why?
I don't know.
I guess because he probably wants to be known for more than just Die Hard.
Yeah, but stop fucking making them and making them be known for Die Hard. Well, don't want to be known for Die Hard. It doesn't make any sense to make a Die Hard movie. And then plan on doing another one before you retire the character. If you're just going to phone it in the entire time.
I mean, some people are like that. Like Christopher Lee, he doesn't like to bring up any of the Hammer horror movies he was in.
Yeah.
Because he feels like it. His career typecasted him in that role for such a long time.
Yeah.
That he doesn't like to talk about it. Like, he'll talk all day long about Saruman. You know, Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, but, you know, the whole deal is...
Also, Christopher Lee is history's biggest badass.
Yeah, but...
Because during World War II, he was a spy.
Shit.
And, like, on the set of Lord of the Rings, when one of the guys got stabbed, and, like, he fell over, he went to, like, Peter Jackson and was like... Usually when people get shot with something, they don't fall like that.
Wow.
And then Peter Jackson was like, fuck, I better change it. Like, he really came at me real serious.
Yeah, but then the same thing is, even though he doesn't enjoy talking about those movies, he's not making Hammer films. Or not making those kind of movies anymore. He's not playing Dracula, like, currently or anything.
I wish.
Bruce, it would be cool if he did, but he's not. Whereas Bruce Willis is currently playing John McClane.
Literally, currently playing John McClane.
Yeah, which is basically himself. It seemed like Bruce Willis showed up from golfing. It was like, alright, let's knock this out. I got other shit to do. it really sucked to watch him just be himself. Like, John McClane is a character. You're not bringing this character alive. I'm watching Bruce Willis.
So it's Bruce Willis wearing a John McClane costume?
Basically, you're wondering what's happening to him. You know, like, what... Like,
what's this cosplay you got going on here?
Yeah, only time I get anything really John McClane from him is a person who's about to die in a helicopter flies the helicopter into the building they're in to try to kill him and his son.
Mm.
So they run and jump out the building. So when they're jumping out, they're flying past the helicopter. John McClane flips off the helicopter.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty cool, but that's like the only John McClane thing he does the entire movie. And that's the very end of the movie, so by the time it happens, he don't give a shit. He really don't give a shit. It's ridiculous. Let me move on from this, because I really got pissed off watching this. It actually really made me feel like I could take Bruce Willis in a fight.
Really?
I'm like, this is the way he's going to act from now on. I can take this motherfucker. I can't take John McClane. I can take Bruce Willis in a fight. Just all old and tired.
No matter how invincible they try to make him.
Yeah, all old and tired. I can take this old, tired motherfucker in a fight. All right. This is going to blow your mind. Listen to this. Next one, they steal a car that just happened to have firearms in the trunk.
Okay, by just so happen, like literally a car off the street.
Yeah, they go to, all right, the way it's explained this is Jack goes to a random car in a club. They hotwire it, and then they pop the trunk. Nothing but weapons in the back of it. And John's like, how'd you know there's going to have weapons there? He was like, a bunch of mobsters usually go to clubs like this, and they usually leave their weapons in the car.
You're taking a big risk with fucking just stealing any car. What if it was just some douche, you know, with spiky hair, tap-out shirt, or Ed Hardy shirt, just trying to go to the club?
Well, there was no one there in the car. I mean, they stole it while it was just parked outside the club.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, what are the odds?
He just picked a random car, stole it, popped the trunk, just to make sure there's weapons in there. There's weapons in there, there's vests. Because, you know, mobsters wear vests, military vests and stuff. There's all sorts of ammo and assault weapons. It was a trunk stacked with weapons. It's like, really? The odds of him just finding just that one car. So, moving on from that ridiculousness. To blow your mind even more, terrorists found a way to clear the radiation out of Chernobyl. So, they found the terrorists with the Chernobyl because that's where they're keeping the uranium for some reason.
Mm.
It's part of the storyline I'm not going to get into. But basically, John McClane's like, are we really going to Chernobyl? And Jack's like, yeah. John's like, seriously, the place is radiated? He's like, yeah, we're going there. He's like, is the radiation still there? And Jack's like, yeah. So they head there with the stolen car full of guns they just found. And they show up there getting loaded up just to go inside this radiated place.
Mm.
That's their plan. That's their plan. However, conveniently, even though the terrorists are there to just get the uranium out of Chernobyl and leave, they actually bring some kind of machine, spray a little area. They're like, okay, safe for us to take off our suits now. They take off their suits.
Ah, get out of here.
Now, when they first bring in the little machine, you see John driving with his son on the way there. And they kind of have a little brief little dialogue. And then they get there, and then now the place is cleared. So within 5 minutes, they cleared out the radiation for Chernobyl. You know, the government can't do that for some reason, but, you know, terrorists can.
Or at least John McClane can. He's invincible after all.
So basically, they actually, you know, even though they could just took the stuff and left, they decided to make it a little more accessible because they don't feel like wearing their suits. So they made it more accessible for anyone to walk around without their suits, which gives way to them to be able to actually have a gun battle in Chernobyl. Completes the whole purpose of why bullshit us like that? Why not just have the whole thing take place somewhere else? I understand they're in Russia, so they feel the need to bring up places in Russia.
Bring up all the like tourist areas like St. Petersburg and shit like that.
Yeah, but just to bullshit us with the idea of they could actually clear up all the radiation.
Did they go to like Lenin's tomb and shit like that as well?
No.
But, oh man, what if all the like uranium was hidden inside Lenin's dead body?
That'd be crazy. But it's just the idea of that. Like, really? Just retarded. Just retarded. Okay, my next on the list. Jack really hates his dad for no fucking reason. They start off with saying they haven't talked to each other in at least 2 to 3 years. They never mentioned the fight that made them not talk to each other in 2 or 3 years. But every time you hear something about John, it's Jack saying, well, he was never there for me as a kid, and he never taught me anything as a kid, and he was always doing other stuff. He's a shitty dad. You're never there.
Wham, my dad was providing for me. Wah.
And then they have this one scene in which John's talking to someone.
Mm.
The guy they're going to go get this daughter. I'll just ruin that. The guy they're protecting ends up being the main bad guy at the very end.
Yeah.
So, before all that happens, they're going to go meet his daughter. And he has a little brief conversation with John. And John mentions, like, his son. He's like, you know what? I'm starting to really feel guilty. I feel bad. I was never there for my son. I was always working. And that's it. He was always working.
Yeah, but does... Well, I've heard that, like, they don't get along at, I guess, at all in the beginning of the movie.
The majority of the movie, because it's like, he calls him John instead of Dad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of him just not getting along. It's a lot of him, it's one-sided. It's John wanted to have a good relationship with him, and Jack just being a complete dick to him. I always want to throw in his face that he's never been there for him.
Somebody was saying that John, like, because John doesn't know he's FBI.
Yeah, John doesn't, but when he figures out, he makes a little joke.
That, like, he hates his, like, they really don't get along because he thinks his son's a bad guy?
No. It starts off with, like, they kind of throw out the idea. They kind of mention something. Like, they haven't talked in 3 years. He mentions that his mom thinks your mom says that she thinks you're on drugs. I told her I thought you're most likely selling them. And that was it. Other than that, because, like, they don't know what's going on with him. But basically, it sets up the idea that he's a fuck-up.
What's John... Well, I guess you probably wouldn't know either, like, anyway. But what's John McClane's status with his wife in this movie?
And they don't mention it.
At all?
That's the only thing they mention is basically... You know, they're not going to give him character development. You're asking for too much.
What am I thinking?
Yeah. Character development in this movie. So it doesn't really have that much writing into the characters. But basically, that's what they threw out. Was like, he says your mom thought you were on drugs. I told her you were probably selling them, if anything. Basically saying he believes that Jack wouldn't be on drugs or falling on that low.
Yeah.
But if you use any kind of, like, brain power to actually process that, you'll actually figure out that Jack is probably a fuck-up. And maybe they're expecting him to fuck-up. But John is still there trying to help him.
Yeah.
And Jack is bitching and whining, but every valid point he throws out is something from his childhood. And there's no place for, like, you were never there for me as a kid in the middle of, like, a fucking gun battle with terrorists and shit. So, like, it just doesn't make any sense. It just comes to a point that it's really ridiculous. By the end of the movie, they do reconcile, but it doesn't really feel like they have a real good scene of them reconciling. It's more of, like, the mission fails, Jack's like, I fucked up, and John's like, well, you can always go home with me, or we can stay here and keep these bad guys' asses. And it's like,
well, John McClane puts on a scorpion costume.
Yeah.
And he's like, get over here.
Get over here, bro. So, like, they just team up together. It's like, there's no real connection between the two. There's no chemistry between them. Actually, that was my next thing. I'll just go ahead and jump into it. That Jack and John have no chemistry whatsoever.
Is it the actors or is it the script?
The actors and the script, it seemed like. It's like, don't give Jack a valid reason to hate John.
Other than, wow, you're too busy providing for your family?
Yeah, basically that's all it is. And then the actors don't really seem to connect with each other. I think his name is Jai Courtney, right?
Yeah.
Jai Courtney is not the best actor. I saw him in Spartacus, and he seemed cool in that, but he fucking died, so it didn't really matter. And that was like the first season, I think. In this movie, he's not the best actor. He does kind of look like Bruce Willis enough, where he kind of put off he may be his son.
Do you think that's why they cast him?
Yeah, maybe. But it
probably is cheap.
Yeah, they could have done far better. And they just don't connect with each other. In between him being not the best actor and very unbelievable, and then Bruce Willis just showing up on set after, like, you know, popping a couple of Tylenols. It just...
What? Popping Tylenols? What's that about?
I'm just making it up, because it feels like that way. I mean, he's never excited about anything. He lazily does everything in his entire fucking movie. So, I just don't know. It just seems like they were both not in the movie together. They were just like, whatever. It was just, it made no sense. There was no chemistry. It's just whatever the fuck. All right, we get the Yippee-Ki-Yay, and it was phoned in. We got a Yippee-Ki-Yay, motherfucker.
Like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, but doesn't he kind of say it that way in part two?
Because he's whispering?
Yeah.
And that's the first one. He's whispering into, the walkie-talkie to Hans as he's trying to hide from his henchmen. But in this scene, he says it like that, all soft and slow. He's driving a car out of a fucking helicopter. So,
wow, if there's ever a time to yell something out.
Yeah. There's like a some kind of like military vehicle, like inside the helicopter. And he's driving it out with a wire connected to it, which would throw it off balance.
Yeah.
And while that's happening, he eventually like falls out of the vehicle and holds on to like the door. Then eventually holds on to the bumper, starts swinging around and flies through a window. And it's supposed to be an overly dramatic action scene. It just seems cheesy and very kind of CG-like, I guess you could say. And then we get the final, you know, him jumping through the building with his son and flipping out the helicopter and landing into some water that is not radioactive as well. And it's whatever. Tacked on happy ending. At the very end, he leaves with his son. They show up at the airport. Lucy's there. They all kind of hug and they kind of smile. It's like slow motion and happy music playing and it's bright outside and then it's all smiles. You get the final still frame with everyone smiling together happy. The roll credits. It's like, come on. We didn't really need all that. I mean, it's cool to have a happy ending, but it just didn't fit in with any of the rest of the Die Hard movies. And they're asking you to get to have an emotional connection with these characters. They don't even have an emotional connection with themselves inside the movie. It's just ridiculous. All right, final thing. Theater cleared quickly and silent.
I mean, that technically has nothing to do with the movie, but let's hear it.
And he comes out there. I was like, man, no one really talked about the movie. It was just silent and awkward. Like no one spoke to each other. No couples held hands.
Was it like when I went to go see Episode 1?
Yeah.
And everyone was just like, oh, man. Like, yeah. It was like we had all just come out of a funeral.
Yeah, so I went home horrified. I took notes during the movie and shorthand actually wrote them out for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope to God no one ever has to watch this movie. I had a better time watching Red State
than watching this movie. You wanted to say Red Tails.
You know what? I had a better time watching Red Tails than watching this movie. You know what? It made me appreciate Part 4 a lot better. It made me appreciate Red Tails more, if you really want to say that. Because at least half of, even two directors, at least one of them tried. Or at least some people were trying the movie. No one tried this fucking movie. It was just ridiculous, man. 1 star. Do not make another one. Just let it fucking die.
Well, it depends on how much money it made.
I don't know yet. I hope it doesn't. Well, I know it's going to make some money, but it actually got my money. But anyone who listens to the show, for the love of God, do not give them any more money. They don't need to make movies like this anymore. You know, it's written by Skip Woods, who wrote X-Men Origins Wolverine.
No, so I guess that explains a lot then.
So there's no way around it. I mean, it's just a bad story. It makes no sense. I mean, this is a guy, I guess like his way of doing the whole, let's just use some kind of machine to clear out the radiation, is his way of describing the animating a bullet.
Yeah, the mind-erasing bullet.
Yeah, mind-erasing bullet. Fuck this movie, I'm going to end the show.
All right.
Any more questions?
No, that's it.
Alright, doing this review made me depressed.
Well, that's all the time we have on this earth.
It's all the time I have on today's show. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, rate and review us on iTunes, subscribe to us. I'm Notorious J.I.M.
And I'm Julian.
It's a good day to end this fucking show.